This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.
It's Wednesday, March the 20th, and you're very welcome to this emergency episode of the Inside Politics podcast from the Irish Times. Jennifer Bray, Jack Horgan-Jones and Pat Leahy are here. Just a couple of hours ago now, Leo Varadkar walked out the front door of government buildings and announced that he was resigning as leader of Fine Gael and would step down as Taoiseach once the party had selected a new leader. Pat, what the hell happened?
Well, certainly a bit of a bombshell, Hugh, that caught everybody by surprise, not just the humble political correspondents you have arrayed before you, but his colleagues in government, in the party. I think he told some senior Fine Gael colleagues last night. He told the leaders of Fianna Fáil and the Green Party last night, but members of the cabinet weren't told, to the extent that some of them were wondering what was going on as they walked in to the cabinet this morning. Only mid-morning did news begin to leak out, and then we had that press conference by the Taoiseach on the steps of government buildings, in which he announced that he would step down as leader of Fine Gael. That, of course, doesn't mean he's stepping down immediately as Taoiseach. He will resign as Taoiseach once a replacement as the leader of Fine Gael has been selected. That is due to happen by the party's Ardéisne, which takes place the Saturday after Easter. I think it's the 6th of April. So it's a very tight time frame for any leadership contest in Fine Gael. Once a new leader is selected, Leo Varadkar will resign. That will automatically mean that all the ministers in the government will be deemed to have resigned. The Dáil will elect a new Taoiseach if all goes to the coalition plan. Dáil will elect the leader of Fine Gael as a new Taoiseach and will then approve the cabinet that he picks. That's the optimistic scenario. From the government's point of view, what it requires everybody in government to do is to ignore the already rising clamour from the opposition for an election. So that's where we stand, Hugh. Obviously, we're all trying to make a bit of sense to it, to discover what the backstory to all this might be and to figure out what it means. And I guess we'll be probably doing that until probably late tonight and for the next few days.
Indeed. So, Jen, I mean, funnily enough, our regular podcast, which just went out an hour or two ago, was an interview with Ian Dale, who did a podcast series last year on the 15 Taoiseach of Ireland, one on each of them. And so I was thinking about that when this all blew up today, and I was thinking, nobody's ever left the office of Taoiseach in this kind of a way before. When leaders left in the middle of their term, it was usually because they were under severe and public pressure, you know, things like Bertie Ahern, back in the day, Jack Lynch in the 1970s. I suppose you could say that, you know, Eamon de Valera left of his own volition, but he was about 175 at that point. Leo Varadkar is the youngest Taoiseach in Irish history. And then all of a sudden, really, to great surprise, he walks out the door.
Yeah. And I think that's it, really. It's the timing of it, really, that's so surprising. I mean, I think realistically, as political correspondents, you know, we're always thinking of kind of when big issues blow up or when there's controversies or whatever is going on, we always kind of ask, what does this mean for the leadership? What does this mean for this politician? And I think we all expected this day was very clearly going to be on the cards one day. You know, although the tide has been turning against him for a little while, or I'd argue since last summer. But it's the fact that it happened today. I mean, my poor little political digest written this morning and sent out at 7 a.m. is completely blown out of the water. One of the politicians actually sent it to me and was like, you should frame this, because I was saying it was going to be a quiet week. But
tomorrow's will write itself, though, Jen.
Tomorrow's will rise to the occasion, I promise. But yes, the timing is the question, really. And I don't think that question has been properly answered. And I can't give you an answer right now because I'm not 100% sure. Because think about it, right? The Dáil was in recess last week for a week. It's going into another recess in 2 weeks' time. The strongest reason that I can think of contained within his speech, And this is actually when he became, one of the many occasions he became quite emotional on, was when he talked about the local and European elections and effectively saying he's not the leader to do right by those candidates, effectively. That's, I suppose, the thing that stood out to me. An awareness of an election that's coming up, a fear about tanking, and obviously significant issues that are bubbling away within the Fine Gael parliamentary party.
So, I mean, he described it in his speech, Jack, as good timing, the best time to do it. Is it that? I mean, I know that, you know, the Europeans and locals are upcoming, but they're upcoming very soon indeed. And we are in this year of elections, and it just seems very late in the day to make this decision.
Yeah. So is it good timing? I mean, insofar as it gives space to have a run into the local and Europeans, sort of. I think that this is born, as Jen says, let's take it on the face of it for his own stated reasons, you know, and which is what we should do until something else emerges, if it does. What it seems to be born of is a kind of fairly introspective analysis of what he thinks is achievable. And the way he outlined it was added seats in the general election and a return to government for Fine Gael and what he can deliver. And that's what he kind of seemed to get choked up about himself. His own analysis is that he's not the man to do the job. And if that is the case, that's kind of in keeping with an analysis that has run through his premiership, which is that while there has been high points and achievements, that the overarching narrative is one of unfulfilled potential, and that, you know, that is at its most apparent in party political elections, notwithstanding the 2019 election, which he did okay, but certainly the general election in 2020. So that is in keeping with one verdict on Leo Varadkar's strengths and weaknesses.
Quite an unusual decision to take for a politician, particularly a politician in the highest office in the land, though, isn't it? To look into, I mean, we hear an awful lot about Joe Biden at the moment making the opposite, coming to the opposite conclusion.
Yeah, they don't tend to kind of look at themselves in the mirror and see the weaknesses rather than the strengths, which is one of the many reasons why this is a bolt from the blue. You know, like when rumor ran around the political world from kind of early-ish this morning through till the news was confirmed just before he went out in front of government buildings, the initial response was, well, you know, it's Simon Coveney. We think that, you know, these rumors about Simon Coveney stepping aside, not running again. And then there was this line reported by the Indo that it was going to be a political earthquake, and a lot of the chatter between journalists and backroom operators at that stage turned from, you know, it's Simon Coveney to Simon Coveney not running again is not a political earthquake, so it has to be something bigger. And then all of a sudden the options narrowed to where we ended up. But I don't think anyone has a fully satisfactory answer as to why. Other than, you know, I suppose, and time will tell whether this is a satisfactory answer, but other than that which he offered himself, which is that he's effectively not the man for the job right now.
I suppose there's always a personal and a political element to a decision of this sort, Pat. On the personal side, I mean, I do recall people saying to me in the past who had talked to him, who he had more or less said to them in private circumstances, this is not the job for life for me. I'm going to be out of here at some point. You know, there's more to life than this. So in that sense, it's not a shock that he would make that decision. The timing might be another matter. But your read on the predicament of Fine Gael, and I don't think it's too much to call it a predicament, is it? You know, they had yet another TD, Kieran Cannon, saying that he wasn't going to run in the next election. I presume it's quite doubtful whether Leo Varadkar is going to run in Dublin West in the next election. The predicament of Fine Gael is quite bad at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was I was writing a little bit in this morning's paper reflecting on the departure of Kieran Cannon, and while you know, clearly not a mass political event in itself, I think it was indicative of the problem that Fine Gael has at the moment. I think tomorrow morning's analysis will be somewhat different. This is indicative of a very big problem that Fine Gael has, and you know, it's not just that it's a bit flaccid in the polls, or that Varadkar's personal rating has weakened. I think it's that, you know, there is a sense in Fine Gael that after three terms in government, it kind of lacks a sense of direction, of purpose, of forward momentum. And that kind of has to come from the top. And it has been evident in Fine Gael for some time that lots of people don't think that that is coming from the top. There was an expectation, a firm expectation in Fine Gael that when Leo Varadkar took over in the Taoiseach's office, that it would enable the party to edge past and maybe eclipse Fianna Fáil as we came towards the next election, that, you know, Varadkar would command the political stage, that Micheál Martin and by extension Fianna Fáil would wilt. But that's not really what has happened. And all the departures from Fine Gael, of whom Kieran Callan was the latest, have kind of added to those problems. And while they're all each explicable in and of their own terms themselves, taken together, they're evidence, I think, of a sort of malaise in the party. And I think, you know, that this move by Leo Varadkar probably has to be taken as part of that trend, albeit on a much bigger scale, that it is a reflection not just of the political difficulties that the party faces, but also that allied with the, you know, the personal decisions of the people involved. And Leo Varadkar said it was a political decision, but it was also a personal decision. And, you know, he's been in politics for all his adult life. Obviously, his life has changed greatly in, you know, the last number of years. And I think he possibly is making the decision that there is more to life than this, and now is the time to go. I'm not still that absolutely explains the timing of this, but I have always found Varadkar to be kind of a self-reflective person, and I think privately self-critical. And if that is true, then maybe it's, you know, he has analysed the politics of all this and come up with, you know, a personal solution to it. But it's still a bit of an earthquake, you know.
And isn't the reality of that conclusion then, Jennifer, you know, supposedly all political careers end in failure, but that Leo Varadkar's political career as leader of Fine Gael, he was elected to do a thing and he failed to do that thing on more than one occasion, is also a failure?
A bit harsh. I mean, it depends.
He's not
really.
Dead.
He's not dead. He's very much alive. He looked quite healthy there outside government buildings, in fact. I mean, a lot of people are asking the question today, what will the history books say about Leo Varadkar as a Taoiseach? It's a very mixed bag. I think Fine Gael's great success has been the economy. And I think that's something that can be taken for granted an awful lot because it's good and it's been good for a while. But other things, recently, I think his political judgment has been called into question on a number of occasions that in and of themselves weren't enough to precipitate a catastrophe. But when you put them together, so the question has been asked, has Leo Varadkar been properly in touch with the grassroots of Fine Gael and the membership and the wishes in the membership? And this came up in the selection, the European selection conventions, in the decision to kind of maybe push for somebody like Josepha Madigan when the members maybe favoured Regina Tartey. There was rumblings around that time about his political judgment within Fine Gael. Then you have the recent referendum, but I don't think that this is the reason why he resigned or stepped down from Fine Gael at all in and of itself. However,
we had some of the finest political minds in Ireland on this show telling us that referendums have no effect on the political landscape. I'd like to think this is the moment at which we push back against that narrative.
Well, actually, when myself and Jack were walking here, I was recalling the last episode we did where you asked me, Hugh, will there be any ramifications? And I was like, nah. So maybe I should resign. But that referendum in and of itself, I think it showed a government that is potentially disconnected, although there's a load of different reasons why that tanked, but it did tank resoundingly. Then if you look at the recent context, I'm talking about what was going to play out today in the Dáil, and it was this immigration issue, is what happened outside Mount Street when the government were, when ministers were jetting around pushing their St. Patrick's Day agenda. And it's a government that's being portrayed as being almost soulless in some ways in relation to how they handle that issue. And I think there's a wider thing about his political judgment within the party and what the party membership want or who they favour as candidates even, with the electorate, which could be reflected in the referendum because he predicted that it would pass, you know, easily. And then in relation to policy things like immigration. But even all of that together doesn't explain today.
There is no one single trigger event, I don't think. But when you take everything that Jen has outlaid in the aggregate, what one person in government said to me today that I found fairly persuasive was he may have reached the assessment that he was one bad thing away from a significant event. And that, you know, all these various different missteps, the kind of the failure to show what some people would say is a sufficient energy and enthusiasm in the office of Taoiseach, the missteps and the gambits on tax, for example, personal tax, which has become like almost an annual event to make some kind of pre-budget intervention.
It's become
on
almost
tax
laughable, hasn't it?
And it doesn't land, you know. Which I think all of these have been attempts to kind of be bold and brash and assertive and put a kind of brand, and all of which have kind of come up short. Then obviously there's the referendum. There's the fact that, I mean, if we are to go by what Paul Keogh and Kieran Cannon said, they both said that he attempted to convince them to stay on when they went to him and said, we're leaving. So you would have to presume then that that's happened 10 times, you know, in the last year or so, that people have gone to him from his own PP. He said, look, would you stick around? You know, there's still a role for you here. And 10 times he's heard no. So there's an accretive kind of issue there. And that when he stepped back, and as Pat said, within that kind of process of self-analysis, perhaps the outcome of it was the trajectory isn't there, the momentum isn't there, and if something else doesn't go my way, they may come for me. Now, I didn't think that was likely, and I think that I'm not alone in that analysis. You know, like everyone who I've talked to today is kind of like, it wasn't about to happen. But one far-sighted way of looking at the situation is to say, look, you know, maybe I am better off trying to do this in my own way, in my own time. And if that is the decision that's been taken, you know, that I'm not the person to lead Fine Gael into the next general election, then this kind of isn't necessarily that bad a time to do it. Because you do have a period now of a couple of weeks where Fine Gael will decide on its next leader. And then it is within the gift of that leader as Taoiseach to decide the most fundamental question, which is the timing of the next general election. And they have enough time running into the windows around that. If we operate on the assumption that a snap election is unlikely, which I think it is, they have enough time to kind of, you know, set the pitch themselves.
So Pat, let me ask you about that then. So they're Fine Gael, they're there, they're on the plane. Their pilot has suddenly opened the cockpit door, ejected out, has pulled the ripcord, he's gone. They need to find somebody who can fly it instead. It is a sort of a moment, you know, they're plunging towards the ground. They need somebody who can pull them out. So it's not really time, is it, for an existential what is Fine Gael for kind of a debate. It's more a who can do this bloody job debate.
Yeah, I mean, I think that actually what this does is it lengthens the odds on an election this year, because you've got to assume that, remember that it is the stated preference of both Micheál Martin and Eamon Ryan to go the distance, to go until March of next year with this before an election is called. And you've got to assume that there is a frank conversation between whoever the new leader of Fine Gael and the two other party leaders is in advance of the Dáil voting for the new Fine Gael leader to be Taoiseach, in which the timing of the election is discussed. And I would be amazed if they don't seek to get either a concrete, a concrete guarantee of the date, or at least a promise that it is not going to be sprung on them in the autumn, much less a snap election before the summer, which I think is a very unlikely prospect, made even more unlikely by today's events. So I think that is one direct effect of today's events. As regards what is the, you know, what is the prospect for the next leader of Fine Gael? I mean, you can be sure there's an awful lot of scrambling going on at the moment. I think it's probably the case that Simon Harris is probably the early favourite, but that depends on what Simon Coveney and Pascal Donoghue do. Do they get in to the race? Do they agree on a candidate between them? And it's just very difficult to foresee how the dynamics of that will work at the moment. And you can expect that people aren't going to be coming out today or maybe even tomorrow, but they will want to be securing the support of colleagues. And the most important part of that process is in the parliamentary party, which wields the greatest number of a disproportionately large influence in the Fine Gael electoral college. So, I think that's where the story is going to go next.
And can somebody, I'm not sure who can answer this best, so chime in, whoever feels they are that person. Can somebody just talk me through the process here? I seem to remember it being rather lengthy the last time with Simon Coveney and Leo Varadkar traipsing around the country to various caucuses of one sort or another. Tell us how it works.
Yeah, they had hustings and stuff last time, and at times it did become a little bit divisive. And we know that kind of Simon Coveney had the grassroots vote, the majority of the grassroots vote. Ultimately, though, Leo Varadkar was too canny. He was too quick. He got the parliamentary party on side way before the bell even tolled. So what happens is it's under Rule 49 of the Fine Gael Constitution, their rule book, and you need at least 10% of the parliamentary party within 7 days of the vacancy arising. So basically, you need 10 Fine Gael, you need 10 TDs or senators to back you as a candidate. Then Pat mentioned the electoral college system. Parliamentary party is 65%. The party membership is 25%, and councillors are 10%. I think the party membership votes on the same day as councillors, with the parliamentary party voting at a different time. And then obviously the results of all those votes are taken, and then it goes into the Dáil effectively. So the executive council, they look after all kind of the organisational decisions.
So there's not going to be much time for hustings this time.
No, not really. And that's what makes me wonder, is this already an uncontested election? And Fianna Fáil seem convinced today, by the way, that it's going to be uncontested, that it's going to be basically Simon Harris. But then we had Hildegard Nocton, who wouldn't previously, not to be unfair to Hildegard Nocton, but who wouldn't previously have been one of the names frequently mentioned as a leadership contender. But she was on, I think it was the News at One, and she was being kind of a little bit coy. And you best believe within an hour of this happening, I was on to all of the leadership candidates' advisors, asking them what's going on. And I think actually in the immediate aftermath, they all joined Varadkar afterwards and were talking to him. And obviously, there is a school of thought that someone like Simon Harris, you know, should he sit on this? Should he go now? Should he move fast? What's canny? What's obnoxious? You know, what would Leo Varadkar do if this was Leo Varadkar back in the day?
Somebody else can take the hit for the election disaster that's looming.
Yeah, but that would be a risky move to take, because that would be viewed as being entirely cynical.
Yeah, I don't think politicians, if they're sufficiently ambitious to be Taoiseach, walk past the office of Taoiseach if the opportunity presents itself. You know, it would first of all be like it would be a decision that invites so many variables. You know, so if you were to say, right, the analysis is, you know, we're goosing this election and I'm better off waiting and then leading the party in opposition and coming back as Taoiseach, I mean, there's a lot of ground to cover before you potentially get to enter the Taoiseach's office again, whereas the opportunity is there now to do it.
But can I ask you, to what extent, if any, let's imagine there is a contest, and let's say everybody seems to agree that Simon Harris, if there is a contest, will be in there. Pascal Donoghue, possibly. Simon Coveney, possibly. Helen McEntee, possibly.
You can make the case
Heather
for any
Humphreys,
of them.
Maybe.
Heather Humphreys as well. I mean, do these people have a different vision of what Fine Gael should be from each other?
I mean, I don't think any of them represent a dramatic break from, you know, Varadkarism, if there is such a thing. Like, they're all long-time cabinet ministers under him. Some of them cabinet ministers actually anointed by Enda Kenny. So they are in cabinet longer than Leo Varadkar was Taoiseach across two terms. So does anyone represent a kind of overhauling of Fine Gael? I don't think so. I think that Harris is the kind of most obvious generational shift, along with Helen McEntee. But I think that probably what they're doing at the moment is they're probably trying to feel each other out in some ways and try and get a sense of each other's intentions. Just to contrast it to when Enda Kenny stepped down, I mean, there was a long run into that and it was clear it was going to happen for some time. And, you know, Leo Varadkar had a lot of time to prepare the backbenches and to assemble a team around him. And while I'm sure, you know, those who have ambition to hold the office of Taoiseach do have plans, I wonder how ready they were to put them into place. I mean, there was that famous story of Owen Murphy, who was instrumental in getting Varadkar elected during the last lot, had a list of the Fine Gael parliamentary party sellotaped to inside his suit pocket, and he would like consult it, and you know, he'd know who was on board and who wasn't. I don't.
He only had one suit, apparently.
He only had the one suit. Yeah, maybe several lists.
Very nice suit.
Yeah. But so I wonder whether anyone's kind of, you know, reached that advanced stage of preparation. What will they be doing now? I mean, it is also the case. And again, look, the next 48 hours will be pretty volatile, I suspect. But it could happen pretty quickly. I mean, like one big endorsement of a putative candidate by another putative candidate, and it could be all over by the shouting. I suppose there is a question as well for Fine Gael, which it has to kind of puzzle out itself. I mean, does it do more harm or good for them to have a contest now? I mean, coronations tend not to go down particularly well, but conversely, you don't necessarily want a very bitter leadership contest. Although, on the other hand, it could be good for Fine Gael to have a short, sharp conversation with itself about its priorities and identity going forward. Time will tell, but I suspect we'll know kind of sooner rather than later.
What do you think, Pat?
I mean, I think there's a lot in what Jack says, you know, that people will have been taken by surprise, you know, proto-campaigns might not be ready to get up and get moving. My view, clearly the incorrect one, was always that there was two ways that this thing was going to happen. You know, either Leo Varadkar would be in government after the next election, in which case he would step down at some stage over the course of that administration, or he was going to lose the next election. And under Fine Gael's rules, then there has to be an election, a leadership election after that general election, in which doesn't result in them being in government. So yes, whoever is the next Fine Gael leader, assuming that the coalition sticks together, and let us remind ourselves that it is very much in the political interest of all three parties to maintain that coalition. So whoever's the next Fine Gael leader gets to be the next Taoiseach for a year anyway. And who knows beyond that. I find it difficult to get a sense of where Fine Gaelers are at right now. I'd be very surprised if Simon Harris is not a candidate. And then I suppose it depends. And is there an older guard candidate or candidates?
Or a Hildegard, I'm tempted to put in.
Very good, Hugh. You know, so you've got to think that if Simon Coveney and Pascal Donoghue run, then maybe the numbers work differently than if one of them runs. But I just, it's too early to have a sense of where people's intentions are as of yet. I don't know. I'm not picking up anything. I don't know if the two guys are.
Okay, well, let me recklessly ask a question that if Simon Harris is the front runner, which is what it sounds like, what does a Simon Harris Fine Gael have that Leo Varadkar didn't?
Are you asking me?
Yes.
Thanks, Hugh. Love that hospital pass. I have no idea. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I'm inside Simon Harris's mind. I think like he's different to Leo Varadkar in his style of, you know, his style of communicating. He probably is, I think, a better communicator than Leo Varadkar. So he has kind of an edge there. I mean, we've talked before about sometimes he can come out and Simon Harris can come out and say things that you think as a journalist, oh, that's a good line. That's very interesting. Sounds like he's really going to do something about that. And then you check in on it 6 months later and it sort of went nowhere. So I do wonder, like, does he have that kind of heft to put actions behind his words? The other thing I would say is that it would be so interesting if it was a Simon versus Simon, and I'm not ruling out the others. I'm certainly not trying to be sexist or anything like that. But if you look at it, a Simon versus Simon contest, Simon Coveney, very well regarded amongst the membership, like we mentioned. And we saw that in the last leadership election. However, what I'm told is that Simon Harris has used this job as Minister for Higher Education to effectively travel all around the country into all, you know, ostensibly for, you know, higher education purposes and go to colleges and meet students and blah, blah. But actually that he's been doubling up those occasions and meeting a lot of the grassroots and getting in touch with kind of Fine Gaelers and sort of take, like, using them as a sounding board almost, but doing it in a very clever way that it didn't overtly come across as him secretly rallying the troops in the background. So,
plus, it's not the most demanding cabinet portfolio, is it?
Exactly. So he's had a bit of extra time. So it, is it, you know, it just brings into this interesting question about the role that the grassroots could, or, you know, the membership, basically, what will they play if there is a leadership election? But also, was it was either yourself or Jack who said earlier on, would it be almost clever to sit this one out and let somebody else take the blame for a disastrous local European election and whatever comes after that? And the Patent Courts referendum, of course, we're all on tenterhooks. But, you know, maybe other members of the team who, like Helen McEntee, maybe they'd be thinking that now and going, well, you know, come at the man, come at the hour. Simon Harris, you've made it very clear you want it. Let's see what you can do. Like, if you were a really canny political operator, you could be thinking that long term. Maybe.
And then what about from the point of view of the government as a whole, Jack? I mean, Pat is saying that if anything, this will cause them to hang together for longer than might have been the case heretofore. But an event like this has to be destabilizing to some extent. It'll lead to some kind of a, even if it's a minor one, a cabinet reshuffle. It kind of, you know, gets the adrenaline going a bit in a way that can, you know, startle the horses. Is there a chance of that?
Well, it certainly gets the adrenaline going for the chattering classes. There's no doubt about that. I agree with Pat that, you know, this is something that lengthens the odds on an election this year. Funnily enough, it's a destabilizing event that may actually have the immediate effect of making sure that they don't go to the country. I mean, they are off the back of referendum results that have resoundingly shaken their self-confidence and opened up this, this, you know, open question as to whether they actually are good at judging the electorate's intentions and values and what it might do next. And now Fine Gael has, if not a full-blown identity crisis, certainly, you know, a period where it has to bed in a new leader. And as Pat has said, you know, the stated intention of the other two, which, interestingly enough, both of them were out early and often today saying, there is a mandate for this government. There is a mandate under the, and constitutionally it's clear that the government can serve all the way through till next March. And that's very much what they want. And I thought it was interesting when Micheál Martin actually followed, Leo Varadkar out onto the steps of government buildings. He said that by my count three times. And I think even Ryan was saying it as well. So there's clear emphasis that they're putting on going the distance now. Why would you invite a big election in on yourself now? You know, why would you already have to fight two in this kind of state of flux and try and extrapolate any relationships that may exist from an electoral point of view between the referendums and party political elections, and then try and map that onto a national election, meanwhile juggling all the other myriad tasks of government and trying to figure out what it is that you want to get done in the remaining months this government has. And then you got to bed down probably a new Taoiseach as well. Like, it's just, you know, this as I say, this is a destabilizing event, the immediate effect of which is one where I think everyone will kind of hunker down to the greatest extent possible.
And Pat, maybe a last question to you, and this is a question I'm sure we'll ask a couple more times over the next couple of weeks. What does Leo Varadkar's successor have to do to dig Fine Gael out of the ditch it finds itself in at the moment?
I think he needs to give them a sense of forward momentum, a sense that the party is in power to do things, to achieve things, rather than simply to be there. Fine Gael is looking for the voters to send it back to government for a fourth time on the trot. That is a big ask. And, you know, elections tend to be about the future. Okay, to a certain extent, they're a referendum on the government, but voters are more future-focused, and politics is an inherently future-focused practice. So I think what the, you know, I think when it comes to the next election, what Fine Gael will need to have is a compelling offering. Yes, a record in government, but a compelling offering for the government that is different to that offered by Fianna Fáil, which is, I guess, going to be, its rival for many votes, even as it is a colleague in government. And, the new leader of Fianna Fáil will have to make an offer, or Fine Gael rather, will have to make an offer to voters for things that they want that they don't get elsewhere. And
does that mean tax cuts again? Promised tax cuts that don't materialise?
Well, he's got one budget left, I guess, in which to give effect to his or her political philosophy. I think articulating that philosophy, but also taking concrete steps that make it, that make his offer credible, or his or her offer credible and believable.
Although that, of course, is within the parameters of what's acceptable with his government partner, his coalition partners.
That's the nature of coalition. And that's why the ending of this government was always going to be even more complicated than the beginning of it. But my sense is that it's just got even more complicated today.
Well, an interesting day. And I'm sure we'll be reflecting on the fallout from it in the days and weeks to come. We will be back with you on Friday with the Friday Wrap. But until then, from me, from Jen, from Jack, from Pat, from our producer, Declan Conlon, and from myself, thanks for listening.
This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, creating a more friction-free office. Made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.